A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 198. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, or spooky ghost story television today, because we are talking about more ghost stories for Christmas. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
We are returning to the BBC's ghost story for Christmas tradition, which basically started in the 1970s and has come back many times since then, and is very nicely represented in a DVD set from the British Film Institute called Ghost Stories for Christmas.
Yes, it's a lovely box set, which we'll talk about in a bit more detail later on. We've been in it before, and we're diving back into its treasures. And as you say, it's that time of year when we're thinking of perhaps some spooky stories for those long winter nights. And when, of course, we talk about ghost stories at this time of year, we have to almost inevitably talk about M.R. James, the great sort of English ghost story writer. And this year we are talking about some more of his stories. So in particular, we're going to be looking at the 2005 adaptation of A View from a Hill. That ran for about 39 minutes, and similar length for the 2006 adaptation of Number 13. So those two full dramatized adaptations we're going to be talking about.
Yes, very interesting ones for sure. And to mix things up a bit, we will throw in Ghost Stories for Christmas with Christopher Lee, which was a 2000 production of dramatic readings by Christopher Lee that were broadcast on BBC television. There are four of those, and they run about 30 minutes each.
And yes, and there's plenty of interesting stuff to talk about when we get to those as well.
Yes, absolutely. So we've done this before, but we'll briefly talk about M.R. James here. Montague Rhodes James lived from 1862 to 1936. We did talk about his life back in British Invaders 57, quite a while ago now. He had a long association with Eton, the school in England, and also with King's College, Cambridge. And he's probably more well-known for his association with King's College, Cambridge, because of a tradition he had there.
That's right, because, of course, it was, you know, his now famous tradition that at Christmas time he would write a ghost story, and then he would read this to a select group of friends and colleagues in one of the big rooms at King's College, Cambridge. And, of course, this tradition continued when he went back to Eton School as the provost there. And these stories became very popular. He was urged to collect them and publish them, which he did in several volumes. And they've gone down in history as some of the sort of the best ghost stories in English literature. And although they don't necessarily feature seasonal themes themselves, certainly this idea that they are ghost stories for Christmas because of his tradition of reading them to his friends at Christmas time. He's one of the big names associated with Christmas ghost stories, I suppose, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There is a very strong English tradition of ghost stories, and particularly ghost stories at Christmas time. And I think a lot of that comes back to Charles Dickens and M.R. James, both of whom wrote these various ghost stories and were known for reading them in public performance readings, and particularly as a thing where they were being read at Christmas time. Now, the BBC produced a drama of Whistle and I'll Come to You that went out in 1968. It wasn't at Christmas time, but that was an M.R. James story. And they then from that produced a series under the title A Ghost Story for Christmas or Ghost Stories for Christmas. And those went out from 1971 through 1978, one a year at Christmas time. And most of those were from stories written by M.R. James.
And it was a very popular series. We've talked about it before. We've covered some of the stories from those 70s TV series, and we may well return to them again in the future, Brian.
Yes, we do enjoy coming to look at these a few at a time around Christmas time, as is the tradition to look at these at Christmas time. Now, the BBC has sort of revived this tradition various times with the Christopher Lee readings that we mentioned and with some other readings as well. And they brought back the title A Ghost Story for Christmas with Dramatic Productions in 2005, this time on BBC Four.
So here we have, as you say, the first one of our adaptations for this time, A View from a Hill, 2005, adapted for the screen by the English playwright and screenwriter Peter Harness, who's recently been on our screens because he wrote Kill the Moon for the 12th Doctor, which has not long aired at the time we record.
Yes, somewhat controversial episode among fans.
Yes, absolutely. A View from a Hill was directed by Luke Watson, and it was filmed in an old manor house in Chertsey. A house, interestingly enough, is owned by the Ministry of Defence now. And they've got, I suppose, filming in the rooms there around the main building and in the woods. And there must be a railway station nearby where they managed to film a sort of period railway line.
Yes, that's right. It was done on quite a limited budget, but they made very good use of the locations they had in the area with that manor house and with the railway station and places in the woods and so on. They were actually going to do some more filming on trains and this sort of thing, which they were not able to do. But it was something that really used the atmosphere of its location, which follows on quite well from the 1970s BBC ghost stories, because they had that feel very much as well. At this one really had quite a stripped back production with a small cast and these locations in a small area, which was quite nice. It featured Mark Letheren playing Dr. Fanshawe.
Yes, and if you're familiar with M.R. James's canon at all, you'll recognize the character of Dr. Fanshawe because he's a young antiquary or a young archaeologist. He's working at the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge, so he's a Cambridge man like James himself. And he travels to this country house in order to assess the silver collection within the house, but also to look at some nearby interesting archaeological sites. And at the house, he'll meet Squire Richards, played by the actor Pip Torrens, who you may remember played the headmaster of the school in the 10th Doctor story, Family of Blood, or Human Nature and Family of Blood, I believe, were the two episodes. So quite an interesting set of Doctor Who episodes, and you may remember him being the headmaster there. And he's quite good here as the Squire. And as often happens with these BBC adaptations of James, we do get a sort of a element of the difference between the classes in this particular adaptation. So it's clear that Squire Richards has fallen on hard times. He's upper class, but he's having to sell off the family silver. And that's why this young and perhaps slightly lower class Dr. Fanshawe has arrived to help appraise the collection.
Yes, that's right. It's very much the upper class authority figure who has somewhat fallen on hard times. And yeah, you do. These are sort of themes that come up in these ghost stories from time to time. The third character in this is the old butler in the house, Patton, played by the always interesting David Burke, who I think we last talked about in The Guardians from the 1970s, much younger David Burke there, but we also saw him in Random Quest, and he played Dr. Watson in the earliest episodes of the Sherlock Holmes productions featuring Jeremy Brett back in the 1980s.
That's right. He's becoming a bit of a British Invaders regular at the moment, David Burke.
Yes, he is, and he's always very good. Now, Fanshawe has had a bit of a difficult journey from the train station to the manor house, which is a little bit in the middle of nowhere, and his binoculars are broken, so he is looking for a pair that he can borrow so he can explore the area around the house and take a look at what you can see from there.
Yes, that's right. I mean, in the original story, I think he's just forgotten his binoculars. But as you say, Brian, here we have him having a bit of a mishap on his journey to the house and breaking his binoculars. So the squire, Richards, lends him an old pair of field glasses or binoculars that come from a collection of sort of relics and other strange objects that used to belong to a mysterious local watchmaker, a character called Baxter. And again, if you know the original story, you'll know that Baxter features quite a bit in the story. He's less of a presence here in the television version, but obviously he is mentioned by name. And we have this collection of bits and pieces that the squire bought up when Baxter died. And here is this pair of binoculars, which he sort of digs out and hands over to Fanshawe. But of course, when Fanshawe comes to look through the binoculars, strange things start to happen.
Yes, he does see some unusual things. And as you often have in the M.R. James ghost stories, he stumbles into something that he cannot deal with.
Yes, that's right. Because as you say, Brian, when he looks through the glasses, he sees some strange things. And it's inevitably going to be trouble for young Dr. Fanshawe. And he's going to find himself in a situation, as you say, Brian, that's beyond his ken and certainly beyond his management. And of course, this will also lead them to investigate a little bit more and to tell us a little bit more what Baxter, this watchmaker, was up to before his death. And what he was doing when he actually constructed this strange pair of binoculars, or at least in somehow altered their manufacture. And we've got this marvellous character of the old butler, Patton, played by David Burke, as you say, Brian. And it's quite clear that he knows more about Baxter than he's letting on. And he will tell us and Fanshawe a bit more about this as the episode progresses.
Yes, that's right. Patton is definitely an interesting character because he's bringing this sort of struggle with the situation and the past of the old watchmaker and so on. A View from a Hill was broadcast on December 23rd, 2005 on BBC4.
Yes, and there we go. So, you know, they've brought back this series. As we've said, they haven't got a huge budget for it. I think there's a note somewhere in the production notes booklet about, as you say, Brian, this idea they were going to do some more filming on actual trains, but they realised that would add an extra £100,000 to the budget, so they couldn't manage it. But yeah, interesting, the BBC bringing back this series.
It was strange. I got the impression that there was someone there. A poacher?
Not much poaching goes on up there.
Whoever. What? Ever it was, it seemed like, it felt like a very unnatural kind of place. I'm silly, I ran.
It's understandable. Hill's called Gallows Hill. Used to hang people there, leave them till they were pecked to bits. You getting all this?
Did you have those glasses with you, Dr. Fanshawe?
What is it with you and those damn binoculars?
I would say that whatever feelings or whatever experience you had up there was very likely due to the owner of those glasses.
And I don't know when the decision came to do another one the following year, whether that was already planned, but certainly the following year we did get one more.
Yes, that's absolutely right. In 2006, the BBC broadcast a new production of Number 13, which again was an M.R. James story, adapted by Justin Hopper and directed by Pierre Wilkie. This time it was filmed in and around Winchester Cathedral, again something where they were really taking advantage of the location they were using and using that atmosphere.
Yes, and it works very well. I mean, again, they've changed things slightly from the original story, which I believe takes place in Sweden. But here we have it very much in a English cathedral sort of surroundings. And yet again, we have another typical James academic. And this time he's an Oxford man. He is Professor Anderson, played by Greg Wise. And he has arrived at his hotel. He's checking in. He's going to be doing some research in the archives of this nearby cathedral. And he's wanting to get himself established in the hotel and basically get on with his researches, which is what he's really after.
Yes, that's right. And he's greeted by the hotel landlord, Mr. Gunton, played once again by David Burke, which continues the tradition that they had had of having some actors appear multiple times in these various ghost stories playing different roles. But here David Burke is once again and bringing something very nice to it. And he shows several different rooms to Anderson. The initial room that Anderson sees isn't one that he thinks will suit his needs. So after looking at several rooms, Anderson decides on room number 12 as the one that will work for him. So he settles in room number 12 and goes on to the cathedral and meets with the archivist there, Mr. Harrington, played by Paul Freeman, and they then discuss various documents and start to find various documents that the professor is going to look at, a number of which are relating to this bishop from centuries past called Franken, and start to reveal some very strange things with Bishop Franken.
That's it. Yes, as you know, as we say, a typical Jamesian academic research in the past, finding out about something a bit strange and maybe vaguely supernatural going on, and before the academic knows it and can do anything about it, he is involved in strange goings on of his own.
And as often happens, there is this character from the past that our academic discovers, and the more he investigates this historical character, the more the academic becomes bound up into the things that were complicating things in the past.
Yes, and I think in A View from a Hill, we had the relic being the pair of binoculars, and here we have the relic, I think, being a document that he finds in the library. And that seems to set things off, because when Professor Anderson returns to his hotel, he has disturbed nights. There are strange noises and things that are going bump in the night. And when he investigates, he discovers that these appear to be coming from room number 13, which, of course, is next to his, except that room 13 only seems to be there during the night, Brian. It's not there in the cold light of the morning.
That's right. Of course, there is no room 13. It goes from 12 to 14. except when he comes out looking because he's heard strange noises, and number 14 has also heard strange noises, and this phantom room seems to appear late at night.
So, strange goings on in the hotel and the mysterious number 13. Again, we have a fairly stripped down production. So it's got its limited locations, but it is on location at Winchester, as you say, Brian. We've got this small cast. Most of the time it centres on Anderson, the hotelier, Mr. Gunton, and the neighbour who occupies room 14. Unlike, I think, A View from a Hill, where the ghost is very much seen at the sort of periphery of vision, we've got a slightly more visible ghost here in number 13, and quite some memorable and some unsettling moments as it makes its appearance, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And again, it's doing something quite spooky with this, you know, working with this location and with this small cast, and often with sort of the suggestions of something being there and just glimpses and the like, which is quite nicely done.
So excellent, spooky, and again, seasonal stuff.
Number 13, broadcast on December 22nd of 2006, once again on BBC Four.
The parchment signed by Nicholas Franken? The one I found and put back. The one that went missing the very next day.
I really have no idea what you're talking about.
It would be a shame if I had to go to the Dean.
I was talking to the Dean last night. He's a little concerned about where your inquiries are heading. I'm sure you are a serious scholar, Mr. Anderson, no axe to grind against the church. But we do think it wise to know exactly what's in our archive before we open it to prying eyes.
Are you telling me to stay away?
So we've got these two BBC Four productions from the early sort of part of this century. We will talk about the availability now, and particularly about this box set that we've been looking at. Here in Region 2, it's now available as a 6-DVD set, Ghost Stories for Christmas, which was released, I think, both by, or it's a joint production from the British Film Institute and the BBC. It has all the 1971 to 1978 stories that we talked about earlier on, some of which we've already covered. It has both versions of Whistle and I'll Come for You. That's 1968, the black and white one, and the more recent 2010 version with John Hurt. Then, of course, we've got these two revival of the series stories that we've just talked about, and three Christopher Lee readings, which we'll get to in our next episode. And then on top of that, there's now an extra disc. The sixth disc now contains these another eight partly dramatised readings of M.R. James stories by the actors Robert Powell and Michael Bryant. And they were from two series from, I think we discussed, from the 1980s, Brian, wasn't it?
Yes, 1980 and 1986. Again, sort of readings with bits of dramatisation. So not unlike the Christopher Lee ones.
Okay, we've got lots of extras on this set. Several interviews with Lawrence Gordon Clark, who produced the 70s series. We've got some fairly extensive production notes booklets, which we're indebted to, as ever, for our own production notes for the our outlines. But as always, they do contain spoilers, so you probably don't want to read the notes or listen to the Lawrence Clark, Gordon Clark introductions until you've actually watched the episodes. And that, at the moment, on Amazon.co.uk is available for just a mere £19.95. Personally, I think it's an absolute bargain and something you should be thinking of for your Christmas stockings.
It is a very nice set. There have also been smaller sets with some of the discs of those you could get two of the discs and another three of the discs. There were some that were available individually. It was initially a 5-disc set. Then when they did the extra disc with the Powell and Bryant readings, they made it available as a 6-disc set. But that single extra disc that was not in the 5-disc version is also available. But if you don't have these, yeah, the 6-disc version is definitely something to look at, because there's lots of good stuff in here. Some great productions and readings. And if you enjoy television ghost stories, there's a lot in this to like, for sure.
Hours of fun. What about in Region 1, Brian?
Well, there's no release of these in Region 1. I think most of them were not broadcast in North America. You can find the Region 2 set on Amazon.com as an import for about $52. I think even with shipping, you'd be better off just importing from Amazon.co.uk.
Okay. Now, there is... You can watch A View from a Hill up on YouTube at the moment. As ever, the quality's not great. It may get taken down when the BBC spot it. But really, I mean, as you've probably gathered, we strongly recommend you should get this Ghost Stories for Christmas DVD set, as it does represent marvellous value at the moment.
Yes, absolutely. The one thing we should note about that set is that there were 4 of the Ghost Stories for Christmas with Christopher Lee dramatic readings, and only 3 of those 4 are included on this set.
Okay, so I guess that will wrap up our first episode on these more Ghost Stories for Christmas.
Absolutely, and we will take a good look at the Ghost Stories for Christmas with Christopher Lee next time. Certainly the 3 of them that we've been able to look at on DVD.
And we'll give our own thoughts on these different productions and how they stack up against those marvellous stories from the 70s. So lots more to talk about next time.
Yes, absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders.com. You can also find us as part of the Geek Culture Network at TheGeekCultureNetwork.com. And we have a Facebook group, so you can reach us through Facebook, and we have a nice little community with lots of good discussions going on in our Facebook group.
Yes, or you could drop by vognetwork.com, which is the home of the Voice of Geeks streaming internet radio channel, where you will find all your geek listening needs satisfied, which shows about science fiction and gaming and lots of other good geeky stuff, including British Invaders, when we go out on a Monday and a Tuesday night there.
Yes, nice participatory, interactive network there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, it's Eamon in England also saying goodbye.